you're listening to Tipping Point with Dan Gibson. Well, I mean, it's Zach Yenser's show. He's out on paternity duty. I think that's what you call it. I think of that word as being sort of negative because of like lawsuits. But yeah, paternity. Yeah, sure. He is doing well, and baby is doing well by all accounts. So great news on that front. Somehow I still get to come back today, even though I have lost one of the lenses of my glasses and everything is blurry. But, you know, it'll be fine. It's very real radio here happening on KVUI. It's 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. If you can call, you can call if you'd like, 520-790-2040. We'll have a show. It'll be great. I have now lost my ability to see any screen. So we're just going to work our way through it. Matt, just wave your arms. Matt Neely behind the board is doing a great job. Just wave wildly. Big motions will help me. There you go. I can absolutely see that. And at some point, we'll get our guests talking, and then I'll like look under the counter for the other lens of my glasses. It'll be great. Pastor Jeff is here. Pastor Jeff is from Hope City Church.
Correct.
Where can people find Hope City Church online?
Yeah, you can find us at hopecitychurchtucson.com.
Great.
I don't know if that gave you enough time to find your lenses.
It 100% did not. But that's okay.
You can ask another question.
So it is our weekly or monthly. How often are you in here?
Weekly.
Weekly. Yeah. All right. It's our weekly faith and culture segment. Did I name that correctly?
Yes, you did.
It would be in my notes, but I can't see them.
That's all right. You're doing well so far.
Yeah, I'm working my way through it. So here was the thing I wanted to talk about. Yesterday I teased because I was talking about Midnight Mass, which is a Netflix show, functionally a horror show.
Yeah.
But has a lot of interesting sort of discussions of faith in it. I will tell you, I'm only two episodes in, so maybe at the end, totally goes sideways. No clue. Couldn't possibly tell you.
Yeah.
But in the second episode, they have an interesting conversation about the nature of God with a Catholic priest and this guy who has gone to prison and is like, I'm done. He's like, I don't do that thing anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know, he's like, I read everything. I read the Tao Te Ching. I read the Bhagavad Gita. I read everything and I'm done. And he can't reconcile the idea of a loving God with an all-powerful God, which is, you know, the sort of classic conundrum of all faiths, probably, right? You want to believe in God who can do everything, but then you also see human suffering. So not to get into spoiler alerts on Midnight Mass, what I wanted to talk about was, well, here's the other second part of that, is that I was watching something on Instagram Reels, which is possibly the worst platform known to man for entertainment, but I was doing it anyway.
It's addicting.
Yeah, it's kind of the worst. I mean, it hits the algorithm hits the notes,
oh,
right?
Oh, for sure.
And there was a guy on there who's a stand-up comedian who grew up in an evangelical household. Deeply evangelical, he says. Mm-hmm. And he does this thing with auto-tune where he like sort of sings a story about, that part's not relevant at all. But he was talking about when he did a series of reels where he was talking about how he was a kid. And he said, oh, you know, when I was a kid and evangelical, you had to get rid of all your secular CDs. That was like a thing that happened, you know. And I grew up in the 80s, so that was very much my experience as well.
Yeah.
And he said, you never think about that with, they never said you couldn't read secular books or watch secular movies. It was always the music.
The music.
Because there was a Christian equivalent for that. Well, equivalent is not the right term, but, you know.
Yeah,
there
was, I'm following you.
Yeah, yeah. Now there's a little bit more of a Christian movie business, but at the time there was Thief in the Night series, classic, really good stuff, and maybe some stuff that was on TBN. That was about it. So what I wanted to talk about was what do you think are the best examples of faith being presented in popular culture? You know what I mean? So, I mean, I will open just as a thing.
Sure.
I watched one of my favorite movies about faith in general is, this is going to sound ridiculously pretentious, but it's the Danish movie Babette's Feast, which is about a woman who was a cook and a housekeeper for these two women and for decades and decades, and she's leaving sort of to retire. And she makes this incredible feast for them. And the idea is really about like service, you know, as like the sort of Martin Luther thing of where I don't know, it's maybe allegorical, but the shoemaker comes to Martin Luther and is like, hey, how do I serve God? And Martin Luther's like, well, what do you do? He's like, well, I make shoes. He's like, make shoes to the glory of God, right? And Babette's feast is her doing this service thing to the glory of God. These women have functionally ignored her for her entire life, but then she's like, I will still serve you in this like incredibly gracious and overwhelming way. So, Jeff, what's your favorite depiction of spirituality in secular pop culture?
Well, I think just to give more context, like I don't come from what other people would call a church background. So I lived in I would say I lived indulgently, you know, in every way. And so with that, trying to reconnect with the local church, or I say reconnect, I grew up in a private school, and that was mostly because of convenience. You know, my parents were at work at 6 a.m. and came home at 6 p.m., and that was the only gig in town that had childcare through elementary school. And so for me, not being exposed to what I think most people would be if they grew up in that culture, it was, for me, very different. There's kind of a pushback, and Zach, if you've listened to the show in the past, has this phrase that he says, he doesn't like things that are woo-woo. And for him, what that means is you're getting too quote-unquote spiritual. And that resonates with me. So when you're talking about that, you know, thinking of movies, for me, full disclosure, I did binge watch Midnight Mass.
Yeah, how'd it go for you?
Yeah, I was like, I'll never get that time back again. And you know, when you made that comment yesterday, I was listening. I said I hadn't heard of it. You know, Squid Games.
Yeah.
You mentioned, and another one. I just personally don't. If it's a movie, I'm into it. If it's a TV series, I get sucked in. So I prefer not to. That's just where I'm from, because there's not enough time in the day for me. But I did do it just in view of our conversation. My wife came home.
Like,
I
set you
like,
up.
I got four
fault.
More hours of this. And you know, in my opinion, it ended sideways, but there were a lot of great narratives throughout that. And so with that, for me, it's often not the Christian movies. It's even often not the ones that are tried to be portrayed as Christian movies. For me, that spirituality comes in the most unexpected of places. Yeah. I like to tell our friends in the church, and I'm not an advocate for going to the bar at 2 a.m. You know, that was a previous experience for me. But those were the most genuine, most authentic conversations.
Sure.
Movies, if you talk about like Patriot, begins with this crisis of I don't want to say faith, but if you remember The Patriot and Mel Gibson, it begins with a comment about, you know, him dealing with his past actions in war and death. And then when it comes full circle, it's like this guy lived life and embraced the realities of life. And there is a conflict that I think all of us experience, whether one is in the church or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, like, I grew up in the church, more or less. I mean, I went to a Baptist church my whole life. And then my father didn't go to church. So this is like weird collision of like, my father couldn't care less about any of that culture stuff. So we listened to like whatever. And my mother wasn't like particular about it, but like I went to a Baptist church. It was very much just like, I had a cassette tape of this band, the 77s, who were in fact a Christian rock band at the time. Mm-hmm. And none of the songs had the word Jesus on the title. Mm-hmm. And so the youth pastor threw the tape out the bus window. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh, well, this is the standard we're operating by, right? Mm-hmm. Which is just very much just like, it cannot be good. Like there is not like an argument about the drums. Well, there was a guy there was a missionary that went to Africa, and we were listening to a rock album, and they said, those are the devil's drums. And you're like,
really?
I'm like, is that really the case? So now we have to listen to Carmen now. Is this really how this is going to work? We have to like...
but why do we do that, I guess? You know, that persona is typified in Midnight Mass.
Yeah.
And everybody's repulsed by that person.
Right.
You know, so, but why do we do that? Can we not be the person that you were describing that has been down every road and is having an honest conversation with his priest?
Yeah.
You know, about where does it all lead?
Right.
What's the point? And I think in that heart-to-heart conversation, God is working, but we want to shut it off because we're uncomfortable with the fact that either we don't have answers or not sure how it's going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a book called Messy Spirituality. And I think for me, it's just this idea that it doesn't fit in a neat box.
Right.
And society now more than ever, it's not like chronological, you know, step one, step two, step three. You know, the pieces of the puzzle are dumped out on the table, and it's like, good luck finding the edges.
Well, we accept that from people in the Bible comically, but then we, like, at least in sort of 90s spirituality, 80s and 90s spirituality, I think it's different now.
Yeah.
There's certainly like a little bit of that expansion of it, but like 80s and 90s spirituality was like, well, you had to look this certain way. And it was just like, well, people in the Bible didn't look that way. They had very like messy experiences.
For sure.
Do
people realize that though?
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, one of
it
the
takes
greatest,
reading it, I suppose.
One of the greatest conversations I had here in Tucson. I'm originally from California, been here now, 7 years, but here in Tucson was from someone who grew up in the porn industry.
Huh.
And as someone in the porn industry, like kid, parents were involved in it, movie making, all of that, which, sure. you know, is probably challenging for some people to wrap their minds around. But he said when he first read the Bible, he saw it through that filter and he said, there's all kinds of pornography in here.
Sure.
This
sure.
is great. And it gravitated him towards the scripture. So maybe for our listeners that have never read the Bible, there's like kind of like a draw there to say
it gets
well,
sexy. Don't think it doesn't. That? It gets Song of Solomon. It gets a little weird.
Yeah.
We will, on that note, that seems like a great time for a break. We'll continue this conversation and some others in the faith and culture space. We're here with Jeff Logsdon. He's the pastor at Faith City Church on 22nd Street. You're listening to the Tipping, or just Tipping Point. Sorry, I almost slipped on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk.
Radio by and for the people of Tucson. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The playoff race is heating up for FC Tucson. On Wednesday, October 13th, FC Tucson celebrates those who have helped the community heal with Flares of Frontline Workers Night. The team for all of Tucson is back at home on Saturday, October 16th. Before closing out the regular season Saturday, October 30th, we'll get ready for Halloween and Dia de los Muertos and the playoffs with Fan Appreciation Night. Get your tickets now at fctucson.com/tickets or call 520-600-3095.
You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love?
This is Kate Delaney. Tune in later tonight as we talk about everything that happened throughout your day. Tonight at 10 on 1030 KVOI, The Voice.
I have no idea what this music is. Like, Zach, the next time, just if Zach's listening, and I imagine he is. I mean, he'll probably podcast or something like that. Wow, that really came on there too. The break popped in. I want to do some consulting about the breaks on this show. That's my, like, I don't get paid for these guest spots. Zach offered, but I said, you know, listen, I'm on the clock. That feels weird, right? But I just want to do a little bit of consulting. I think we can punch up the breaks a little bit. Just saying. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm not Zach Yenser. I'm Dan Gibson. I'm Senior Director of Communications at Visit Tucson. We're in the midst of Faith and Culture half hour. It's 30 minutes of hot spirituality chat.
That's how it ended on the last segment.
We were talking about faith and popular culture. And so, Jeff, not coming from like the sort of Christian culture and sort of working your way in through, working your way into that culture now. Christian music, what do you think?
So here's the odd thing. Just full my kids tease me because there are moments where that's all that's on the radio.
Sure.
But one of the greatest times we discovered Alexa. I'm kind of slow on the technology thing. And so 2020, COVID and you're quarantined, we went and got an Alexa. My daughter and I We had this like all-nighter where we plugged in Alexa and we just went back and forth on pop culture songs, rock and roll songs. And I think we watched the sunrise. It was like, hey, have you listened to Led Zeppelin? Do you know about Guns N' Roses? You know, and you know, I must have gone to easily 50 concerts of all kind, you know, reggae, rock and roll, country growing up. And so music was very much a part of my life. And then trying to look at Christian music, I have to be a little more selective. I don't like a lot of it, but there are some really good albums that are out there. I'm very much as soon as you think you got me figured out, I'm listening to something completely different.
Just a curve. Yeah, just moving in a different direction.
Different. But it's been fun. Our son just started taking on, like, he's learning guitar and he's learning bass, and he's getting into some of those bands that I grew up with.
Oh, cool.
So for me, it's not a, hey, shut it all off. The drums are the devil. I think, you know, that's bizarre to me. but those have been some of the influences there in the past.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, like I had this time period where I was working in the music business, and then I worked at Apple Music. And then, I ended up, my entry point in that was that, I had written an article about a Christian rock band. I can't remember even which one, as a music journalist, and a friend of mine who I used to work with at Warner was like, do you actually know that stuff? Like, did you actually grow up with that stuff? And he's like, we need somebody at Apple Music to like curate all these like Petra playlists and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it was funny because it was like a weird in code. And now there's this sort of like, there were some of us who grew up with Christian music that we thought were really good. And we were trying to be like almost evangelists comically, like Daniel Amos or 77s or, I mean, I guess as it like went forward, bands that were on Tooth and Nail and all these things, it was sort of like, it was too cool for like the mainstream of it. But then on the other hand, like my life was somewhat changed by like a mainstream Christian album by Amy Grant's Lead Me On, like actually like made me think about faith in a different way. Mm-hmm. But now it's just like, it's funny. I listen to a fair amount of like what would be defined as Christian music from that subculture, but then don't go to church anymore. So like, I don't know what I'm doing. Something's not quite connecting there.
To be fair, I don't hear lyrics. And so that creates a problem in our household because I'm celebrating the beat to songs that my wife's like, you have no idea you're listening to.
You're like, Mr. Brownstone. I don't know that guy. Yeah, and they're like, it's actually something else.
Yeah. But if our listeners want a few albums, 10th Avenue North and King and Country are two that come to mind that I think are good.
Yeah.
King and Country actually visited and had a concert here before COVID.
Yeah, the fairgrounds, I think.
No, like that. That one was downtown.
Time doesn't mean anything to me anymore.
Yeah, me neither.
The other thing I was kind of curious about, and you mentioned you had like a little bit of experience in that space, is the sort of the moment thing in one corner of Christian culture is the discussion of the Christianity Today podcast, The Rise and Fall of Mars Hill, which is this multi-part. It actually continues to expand this whole story. And if you managed to avoid all of this in the 2000s, which probably good for you, Mars Hill was a gigantic church in Seattle. And I mean, and had this massive influence across the country in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. A lot of people were really influenced by Mark Driscoll, who was the pastor, who was, he immortalized some ways by the book Blue Like Jazz, which had this very big moment in Christian culture as well, because he was the cussing pastor in that. Mm-hmm. And Mark Driscoll's thing was that he was like tough. He was like a tough guy.
Right.
Like he's like, oh, I don't respect a Jesus who wouldn't like fight. Like, which you're like, I'm not, I don't know if exactly we're getting that, but sure, you know. But he was appealing to a very unchurched area in Seattle. And, where there just was like a deep sort of absence of church culture. The podcast is interesting because to some extent it is a challenge because it is like, well, Mark Driscoll might have been a bad person. like he had this, a lot of success, a ton of success, but also might have been a jerk, you know? And it doesn't make an extremely great case for him being much more than just like an awful person. I mean, like, there isn't, like, some big indicting thing. I mean, there's certainly plenty of those, like, James McDonald, who had, in Chicago, a lot of success, but also was not just a terrible person, but was doing also terrible things. Or Hybels at Willow Creek. Who also turns out doing a lot of awful things. What I think is, what I wanted to ask you, and, you know, you're among pastors and around a lot of church leadership. Why do we celebrate terrible people in Christian culture sometimes? I mean, why do we, the question is, why do we do it in mainstream culture too? But we accept a lot of, like, with success in Christian culture, sometimes we accept a lot of, like, garbage. And it's a weird thing. Like, why do we champion some of these people?
Well, do we really know the person? I think we've gotten good today at demonizing people. But, you know, the media is fickle, so it likes you today and it hates you tomorrow. And if you are going after that public affection, you're just going to destroy yourself. But I think within the realm of leadership as it relates to the faith community, you've got people who are trying to take people somewhere in their relationship with God, and we ourselves are just as flawed. And so there's this perception that we're something that we're not. And so for those that are familiar with a Mars Hill or a Willow Creek, or even Zach and I had discussed previously Liberty, you know, there are situations, whether it's pride or lack of accountability or sexual impropriety, these are things that humanity generally deals with.
Right.
You know, and so when it emerges with pastors, there's something, what in the world is going on? Well, it's always been there, but do you have it in check? I deal with a lot of those things, but do I have it in check?
Yeah.
And on a bad day, I'm susceptible to all of it. But when those moments emerge, I think the community eats it up because it's, see, I told you so.
Right.
Or now you become the poster child for why I shouldn't go to be a part of a faith community.
that's what's deeply unfair about it, right? Is like, there are bad people in every profession, right? By all means. I'm trying to think of the name. There's an artist who does these sort of aphorisms in New York. And one of them is, it comes no surprise that power corrupts, right? And it's just like, well, of course it does. Like people who get to those positions, sometimes they get there because of their egos. Sometimes they get there because they have a strength of conviction and all these things. And then those go south, right? Mm-hmm. Asking for more power is a blessing and a curse. And so when you get to those spaces, it isn't entirely shocking that it doesn't go that well.
Right.
But yeah, I think there is a certainly like, the internet culture has us championing the downfall of all successful people to some extent. Like it just,
100%.
That's what Twitter is for, I think.
Well, and humanity wants to be able to trust. They want to trust someone at this point.
Yeah.
You're not going to find, you know, where can I trust someone? They definitely want to trust their pastors. But I think in our context, personally, it's, look, I'm just as flawed as you are. Let me share those flaws and let's try and figure it out together. And when I'm wrong, hopefully I'm able to say I'm sorry. Sometimes that's a struggle, but we're not any different. And it is sad to see, you know, people put themselves on a podium or have their congregations put them there, and it's a longer way to fall.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's an interesting podcast. It's funny to see people's reactions to it because you have I think some people in the church were like, well, this is unfair to Mars Hill and to the church in general. And then there's other people who are like, well, I think we need to talk about leadership and about accountability.
We should talk about it.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So there's an element of that. Well, thanks, Jeff. Give people the website address again for the church.
Yeah. Hope City Church, Tucson.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for coming in. We have Steve Christie, county supervisor, coming in next on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. I'm Dan Gibson filling in for Zach Yenser on Tipping Point.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over. In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's the nearly 60 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new Tech Park at the Bridges currently under construction, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Helping you make better money decisions is what The Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
It's very smooth. This is very, like, it's... Wow. Wow. It's like, I was trying to think, it's like a... I was trying to think of like the sort of new age things. I got nothing. Sort of soft jazz. Like it's a George Benson B-side from like late 80s. I don't know. 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk, and Dan Gibson heckling Zach Yenser's music choices. So what you get, Zach. Sorry for having a baby. This is what happens. If you want to give a call, it's 520-790-2040. You can find so much information about this station at kvy.com. I do have to mention, I did a terrible job of this yesterday. Let's talk about Little Love Burger. Let's make sure that we give Little Love Burger the action they deserve. This segment right here is sponsored by Little Love Burger. It's opening downtown on October 20th. Little Love Burger will serve up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, Hub ice cream milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. Follow their beat, get it, on social, at Little Love Burger. Little Love Burger is from the people who own... AC Marriott and a Hub and Playground. Well, Playground's going through rebranding, but a lot of that space down there, they do an excellent job. And I would assume that their burgers will be excellent. There's my tentative. It's not tentative. It's a full-throated endorsement. It's just in advance. I haven't had these burgers. Nobody's invited me to have these burgers, but I bet they'll be great. All right. We have Steve Christie here. County Supervisor Steve Christie. Not much happening in the county. I don't know what we're going to fill the next 30 minutes with.
Yeah, it's very quiet.
Yeah.
No robust discussions or any controversy or anything. No,
very it should
quiet.
Be fine.
Nothing's happening.
No, it should be all right. So, opening with this, I think we've hit this sort of interesting space with COVID, I think, in Tucson as it stands right now, where I think it opens up to sort of the mass, larger group of children, we might have vaccinated most of the people we're going to get right now. Like, that just might be where we're at, right? People have made their decision. They're pretty, like, they figured it out. You're either going to do it or you're not going to do it. We had a space in the middle where people were sort of just, like, lazy and hadn't gotten around to it. Well, lazy isn't the word. They just hadn't gotten around to it. They're like, I guess I could, but I might not. And I think we got most of those people through... whether you think they're good or not, which is an understandable decision, mandates and all these things. We got to a point where this is probably all the adults we're going to get. How does that affect Pima County as a whole? Is this just how we live now? Like, is this just sort of as a government and as a space, like this is, do we just have to operate with this sort of just like coverage? Like, where do we go from here?
Well, I think the biggest concern that I have at this particular point, and you pointed out that we're going to get probably as many people vaccinated as there are going to be vaccinated. Now it's the intent and the pushing by county administration and other elected officials to get everybody vaccinated. And particularly my area of concern that I think is the most onerous and damaging, I think, in many ways, is forcing certain groups of people, such as law enforcement or nurses, healthcare workers, or any kind of large employment centers, to mandate that all of their employees get vaccinated, whether they want to or not. And if they don't want to, they will be penalized in a very punitive manner in an area that hurts them the most, and that's in their pocketbook, either by higher insurance coverage rates or no ability to have second jobs. For instance, in the sheriff's department, a lot of the deputies do part-time work off duty that to supplement their income very often, so they don't have to get food stamps or assistance, and that's a very sad state of affairs and another subject for another time.
Loop back to that. Yeah, for sure,
but I think the issue comes down to something very clear. Is it better to have no law enforcement or no healthcare workers, or have healthcare workers and have law enforcement who are unvaccinated. And we have a real leakage of staff in the deputies in the sheriff's department. It's understaffed, has been for some time now, but for a variety of reasons. Now they've got one more, and that's forcing folks in the sheriff's department who don't want to receive the vaccination, threatening them with their, either their jobs or their livelihood. And the same thing I'm seeing with a terrible staffing shortage in hospitals. That's really coming to fruition now and to the forefront. We're seeing not the overwhelming issue of COVID patients, you know, flooding the system. It's the system is not able to even be staffed properly with enough folks manning and staffing the beds that they can't take on other issues such as heart attack, diabetes, all kinds of other issues, accidents that don't allow for the staffing to make the coverage. So we have to, as a community, come to grips that there are going to be people who do not want to be vaccinated, and we have to decide, is with the staffing shortages, both in law enforcement and in healthcare, is it better that we have no staff and can't take care of those who are sick, injured, et cetera? Or is it better if residents of Pima County are victims of crime because we don't have enough law enforcement? Or is it better to have law enforcement, have healthcare workers who are unvaccinated tending to those duties that they've always done? And not too long ago, they were our frontline heroes. They were receiving hazardous pay. We idolized them, and rightly so. They were putting their life and their livelihoods on the line, and they were making all these sacrifices. And now all of a sudden they're being vilified and segregated because they choose not to exert their ability of making the choice whether or not to be vaccinated.
So, I mean, yeah, there is sort of that stalemate there, right? Like, it's just where you have reached this point where it takes some sort of compulsion, right? I guess the challenge is that, like, what do you do on the... as a public health thing, do you just have to just sort of say, like, we just have to live with this in this space, right? Because of certain people who are... if there is a group of people that are unvaccinated, that the assumption is that the virus will sort of just keep rolling around. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. I mean, I'm obviously not a public health person, but like, do we just sort of have to say, like, we live with this amount of risk forever?
Well, certainly there's going to be that element, and there's that element in everyday life, no matter where we go or what we do, with all kinds of influenzas and viral diseases that we have to get flu shots too, and
right,
things of that nature. So there are going to be health issues out there that we're going to have to live with and have to adjust to. I think that the real issue, though, is respecting the freedom of choice for individuals who do not, for whatever reason, want to take the vaccine, and allowing them to continue working. There's the other issue, too. Many of these folks who don't want the vaccine have been working through the pandemic for months now.
Right.
I got to believe they've probably been exposed to the vaccine. Healthcare workers, law enforcement officials have been exposed and probably contracted it and probably have antibodies right now, and they don't even need the vaccine. And that's not even taking anything of that nature into account in this whole mix. And do they really need the vaccine? Maybe they've got antibodies built up from previous exposures that don't require them to take the vaccine, but you never hear of that element.
Sure. Yeah, it's definitely complicated by all means. So, I mean, you did mention, right, like the sort of issues with staffing. This was a problem for law enforcement prior to the pandemic, by all means. I'm opening a can of worms here with just 2 minutes left. So good job, radio hosting on my front. What, I mean, is the issue in the county with sheriffs, and it's not dissimilar to the city and the police department. Do we just have to keep elevating pay? How do we make this a more attractive space for or law enforcement officers that we can hire more.
Well, certainly they need and deserve more pay, and that's been one of the major factors that there's been such leakage in the staffing of the Pima County Sheriff's Department. Many deputies, and I heard some horrific numbers, have left or are in the process of leaving and going to other communities because the pay is higher. Now they're probably going to other communities not only for the higher pay, but they're probably more lenient. I've heard of a number of communities that don't require their law enforcement to have the vaccine. So that's certainly taken into the mix. But the other issue is by all these mandates and these coercive measures to penalize and to be punitive to employees of the county or other industries like healthcare or Raytheon, any of the big 100-plus employers, mm-hmm. all of that issue is coming to fruition where we're going to be losing employees, and we're going to be realizing that our exposure to higher crime rates, to staffing shortages, these things, I don't think people realize what these mandates can actually do, and it's an unintended consequence that we're all going to be suffering from.
I saw there's a billboard on Speedway near Swan, I think it is, for Albuquerque, like promising sort of these higher pay rates for the Albuquerque Police Department. And I'm offended because I don't like New Mexico, but I was just like, you come into our house and try to hire our law enforcement officers. But I mean, it does bring an interesting thing. It's like, well, if that's appeal, I mean, at the end of the day, we're all looking for more pay, most people, as it goes.
Well, the other thing, too, is we're creating what is a legal end here, and that's creating a hostile work environment. Mm-hmm. And I, as a former employer, I've hired and fired thousands of people over 30 years, managed as sales departments and service departments for many, many years. I know how important it is and how expensive it is to recruit, retain, and culture employees, keep them, get them to up to speed to where they need to be able to understand what their role and their mission is. But at the same time now, we've done all that, spent all that time, effort, and energy, and money, and now we're saying, well, you need to have a vaccination. If you do not, we are going to be punitive to you by forcing you to pay higher insurance rates, not to have the ability to expand your job on your off-duty time, and on and on and on. This creates a hostile work environment that who the hell wants to work in that kind of situation?
Well, on that note, we'll jump back into that. I caught Matt by surprise. He was typing, and then I'm just like, oh, let's go to break. It was a whole thing. Behind-the-scenes radio chat here on on Tipping Point. We'll be back with Supervisor Steve Christie on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. You're listening to Tipping Point with me, Dan Gibson, Senior Director of Communications for Visit Tucson, filling in for Zach Yenser, who has a bunch of titles, too, that I just don't remember. So listen, let's keep listening. Don't change that dial.
Valley to Vail and everywhere in between. 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
The playoff race is heating up for FC Tucson. On Wednesday, October 13th, FC Tucson celebrates those who have helped the community heal with Where's a Frontline Workers Night. The team for all of Tucson is back at home on Saturday, October 16th. Before closing out the regular season Saturday, October 30th, we'll get ready for Halloween and Dia de los Muertos and the playoffs with Fan Appreciation Night. Get your tickets now at fctucson.com/tickets or call 520-600-3095.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love? Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Life isn't about money, but how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
Zesty. This music's happening here. It's like a sped up Kraftwerk record. I got a couple more. I mean, I have not worked in a Can or Noi reference. I got Tangerine Dream and Kraftwerk in. So congrats to me on German electronic groups mentioned here on Tipping Point. You're listening to Tipping Point on 10 Through the Voice, trusted local news and talk. We're here with Supervisor Steve Christie. So in other controversial things happening in our area, we're going to close this with something positive. We'll go, you know what I mean? This is what we're going to do at the very end here. We're going to talk about this, and then tell me a few very positive things that you think are happening to the county. But first, on the November ballot, which it may surprise people to know, even if they're in the city, that there is an election happening this November. Yesterday we had a conversation about turnout, and I think one of the guests said that they'd get to 100,000 voters. I think that might be ambitious, but we'll see. There is a ballot measure for $15 minimum wage in the city. If that happens, and I think that's a big if, I mean, it's not an editorial position here, just people have very conflicted feelings about that. If that passes in the city, what will be the effect of that in the county?
Well, there'll definitely be an effort to include that into the county in some fashion or form, either by ballot or by edict, mandate or of some sort by the Board of Supervisors. But one of the concerns I have is that there seems to be this kind of cascading effect of political ideology and philosophy that is coming from the mayor and council that is kind of cascading over into the Board of Supervisors. We have two of my colleagues whose districts are primarily urban in the city, and they're taking a very supportive and proactive role on the Board of Supervisors of initiatives that the city of Tucson is putting forward. And I know that at least three of my colleagues have signed on to the minimum wage $15 an hour plan, two very actively and very vociferously. The third one basically said that he likes the concept, but he's not sure if he wants to do that on a countywide mandate without it going to the vote, a vote to the public. So there definitely could be that issue where the influence of the city and city of Tucson through its mayor and council can actually help direct and aid the Board of Supervisors majority to enact it in the county. And I think that would be a disaster.
One other thing I actually just occurred to me to ask. Sorry to put you on the spot. Should there be more regions in the Board of Supervisors? I mean, it's been the same number for a long time. Is it a challenge? Probably not for you. You're doing an excellent job. But like, is it a challenge to represent a growing? I mean, the area keeps growing and growing and growing. At what point is it worth considering expanding the board?
Yeah, that's kind of dictated by the legislature, and they have certain ramifications that you have to adhere to. as far as population, it's roughly 200,000 residents in a would create a district, and as that number expands, eventually there probably would have to be another district formed. My district, District 4, goes from Mount Lemmon all the way down to Green Valley and all the way to the Cochise County line, and takes a chunk out of Metro Tucson on the east side, and then the Tancredi Valley as well. That's the fastest growing part of our community. In the last, I think it was the last census, we've increased by 30,000 people, and every day it's getting bigger and bigger. So yeah, that's something that I'm sure the legislature is going to have to look at, and of course we're going to be dealing with it with redistricting.
Right. So we have a few minutes left. Four-ish minutes. Tell me something that's great that's happening in the county.
Well, in the county or my district?
Let's go with your district. Represent your hood, yeah. Supervisor Christie. What do you got going on?
I always call my district the jewel in the crown of Pima County. I think it's the most beautiful and the most livable, and certainly has the most benefits of lifestyle and environmental quality that you can ask for in southern Arizona. One of the things that's exciting is up on Mount Lemmon. There's two developments going in. One is the a lodge. Remember the old one burned down.
Right.
Some folks are getting together and have already broken ground and started the Mount Lemmon Lodge, and this is going to be a higher scale kind of. It's not just a rustic wood type of a facility. This is going to be right at the 5-star level, and it's going to have everything from the a concierge kind of environment and shops and specialty areas for like coffee and maybe craft beer and things of this nature, in addition to some very luxurious accommodations. And that's been gone for some time, so to see it resurge in this manner, I think is a terrific asset for the Summer Haven community and Mount Lemmon in particular as a destination. Another development down the road a little bit from there is what we call chalets, mm-hmm. But they're individual casitas, more family-oriented, individual sections of overnight staying, a little less pricey. Can be rented out well in advance of a weekend and for hiking and camping and things of this nature, more family-oriented. So those two things, I think, are going to be a real asset and a real addition to the Mount Lemmon experience, especially after they've gone through the devastation of the Bighorn Fire and before that the Aspen Fire and droughts and all kinds of aspects that have really hindered a lot of the business development up there. And then I think another issue that's coming up is the Sawmill Restaurant is looking perhaps to expand in some sort of a shop or something else. So there'll be a lot of activity going up in that community that could really draw people up there during the hot weather and the cold weather. And of course, there's the ski run up there as well. So I think the positive elements we're seeing in Summer Haven kind of illustrate the positive elements that we're seeing throughout my district. There's a lot of building going on. Permits are popping up like crazy. Rocking K Ranch is opening up. HSL Properties is building some terrific projects in that area. It's growing and booming, and it's understandable why.
I was looking at we were trying to host a journalist, I think, in the newer cabins on Mount Lemmon. And they were at the time, like, this is still in the middle of COVID, I think, booked out through like April of 2022. Yeah. I was just like, please build more. We could always use more rooms that have like a distinctly like Tucson and interesting flair.
Very grateful to your organization's support for the businesses up there. So it's gratifying to see that it's working.
Absolutely. Occupancy is rising by all means. Well, thank you, Supervisor Christie. People can reach out to you through your office. So you're online. You're everywhere. You can yell out his name into the wind and he'll help you with something. Thanks to Zach Yentz for letting me guest host the show the last 2 days, and best luck to him, his wife, and their growing family. You're listening to 1030 The Voice. Trust the local news and talk. Don't change the dial. Bill Buckmaster, well, he's not coming up. Matt Russell will give you the Enthusiasm Express today, filling in for Bill Buckmaster. And just leave it here. And then Dave Ramsey will tell you how you need to budget better after that. So thanks to Zach again. You're listening to Tipping Point on 1030 The Voice. Trust the local news and talk. KVOI.com.